Jabotinsky admits in his recollection that he had no special connection to the land of Israel. He was motivated by what had happened in Kishinev. And yet, when the possibility was put forward of postponing even a little bit the push for the land of Israel, suddenly this culturally assimilated Jew found within him some deep connection to the Holy Land. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 165, Jabotinsky and the Uganda Plan. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In 1903, a young man by the name of Vladimir Jabotinsky arrived at the Zionist Congress in Basel to witness one of the most famous debates in the history of Zionism. His own reaction to the scene would surprise him, a reaction that tells us something profound about the Jewish connection to the Holy Land and Jerusalem. In 1902, Herzl met with British Colonial Secretary Joseph Chamberlain to ask for Zionist access to El Arish as a foundation for a Jewish national home, a site that Herzl saw as being as close to the Holy Land as possible. That request was turned down, but in 1903, Chamberlain offered land in Africa to the Zionist movement. This is the origin of what is wrongly called the Uganda Plan, though, as my friend Leo Leibovitz pointed out, it was neither about Uganda, nor was it ever really a plan. It was land in Kenya that was offered, and it was done in 1903 when the persecution of Jews in Eastern Europe became more publicly known following the searing events of the Kishinev pogrom. The question facing the Zionist movement was whether it should authorize an investigative committee to journey to Africa to examine the feasibility of the area in Kenya as a preparatory refuge. The Zionist Congress met in Basel in 1903 at the very same auditorium at the Stadt Casino, and Herzl announced the proposal to the Congress in what would turn out to be his last Congress. And these are his words, quote, "It goes without saying that the Jewish people can have no other goal than Palestine, and that, whatever the fate of the proposition may be, our attitude toward the land of our fathers is and shall remain unchangeable. Nevertheless, the Congress will perceive that our movement has been tremendously advanced as the result of our negotiations with the British government. I may say that our attitude towards Palestine was candidly and fully explained to the members of the British cabinet and to the high government officials who had this matter in hand. I believe that the Congress will be able to find means to make use of this offer. The spirit in which the offer was made must of necessity contribute to improving and alleviating the situation of the Jewish people without our renouncing one iota of the great principles upon which our movement is based." End quote. Herzl again stressed in his speech that this proposal was meant as a preliminary measure only, with the Holy Land as the goal, saying about the proposed area in Africa, quote, "Zion it is not and can never be." End quote. This is what Herzl said, and his announcement brought to the fore the larger question facing the Zionist movement. Was it seeking only a refuge for Jews, which in theory could be anywhere, or a glorious return to the land of Jewish destiny? Herzl, in his speech, argued that he wanted both, that a preliminary exploration of an area in Africa was only a temporary measure. But his words caused a firestorm, and when the majority of the Congress voted to authorize an exploratory committee, many of those opposed, who happened to be from Eastern Europe, the very Jews that Herzl sought most to help, stormed out of the auditorium. This was the first true major debate that threatened to split the Zionist movement, and when the Congress came to a close with all the delegates returned to the auditorium, Herzl, in his closing address, sought to assure all that this proposal was only for a preliminary refuge, that Zion remained his goal, and thus the man who in 1897 was so assimilated that, prior to attending the Zionist Congress, he had to prepare in order to receive an aliyah at the Torah, in order to be called up to the Torah, in Basel on the Shabbat preceding. This man, in 1903, proclaimed to all those assembled, "Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yimini, if I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget its cunning." A committee was eventually dispatched to Kenya, and its report was decidedly negative. The next Congress in 1905 rejected the proposal of Chamberlain, and the Zionist movement from that moment forward focused only on the Holy Land. My goal here in today's episode is not to criticize either side of this debate, but rather to ponder what one man in Basel discovered about himself at that moment. One of those who had voted no to the proposal and who had stormed out was a young man attending his first conference, a man who had become possessed with the Zionist cause following Kishinev. At this conference in Basel, this man was unknown, but he would go on to become a very important figure indeed in the Zionist movement. This was Vladimir Jabotinsky. Though they would be very different fixtures in personality and life, To some extent, there is a striking similarity to the origins of Herzl and Jabotinsky, with the latter in a certain sense being the Eastern European version of the former. Jabotinsky, like Herzl, was raised in intellectual assimilation. He grew up in Odessa, became a journalist fluent in many languages. He was a journalist like Herzl, and like Herzl, he was driven by the plight of his brethren, the Jewish people. And like Herzl, he discovered within him a profound Jewishness that he may not have known fully about before. It was in Basel in 1903, I think, that this would first be truly discovered. And to explain what I mean, we turn to Jabotinsky's own fascinating account of that Congress, taken from a passage from an English translation of his autobiography published in the Jewish Review of Books. Before we cite Jabotinsky's autobiography, let us set the scene. Before the Congress, seeking to alleviate the situation of the Jews in Russia, Herzl had met with the Tsar's interior minister, the notorious anti-Semite, von Pleve, and there were those who felt that this meeting by Herzl was inappropriate. Kishinev was so recent and the subject so raw that it had been determined that it was not to be discussed in the Congress. But Jabotinsky, showing a determinedness for which he would be known his whole life, was undeterred. He decided to defend Herzl when he rose to speak. As he writes in his autobiography, quote, "I decided that the interdiction did not apply to me because my experience, the experience of a journalist in Russia, skilled in the art of writing on a risky question without irritating the censor, would help me on this occasion too to steer clear of the reefs," end quote. And so when Jabotinsky came up to speak, he began to be shouted down. Jabotinsky tells us, quote, "The delegates in the corner of the opposition sensed immediately what was in the mind of that young man, unknown to everybody, with a black head of hair, speaking a polished Russian, as if he were reciting a poem in a gymnasium examination, and began to stir and shout, 'Enough, no more!' Panic broke out in the hall. Herzl himself, who was busy in the adjoining room, heard the noise, came out hurriedly to the tribune, and asked of one of the delegates, 'What is it? What does he say?' It so happened that delegate was the same Dr. Weizmann, and he replied briefly and emphatically, 'Kvatch, nonsense.' At that, Herzl came toward me from behind the podium and said, 'Ihre Zeit ist um,' your time is up." And these were the first words and the last I ever had the privilege to hear from him." End quote. So Jabotinsky writes, "This alone is a fascinating and eerie story, for here we have a very brief meeting between two of the most pivotal people in the history of Zionism, with Herzl having no idea how important this young man that he was meeting would be. Herzl said to Jabotinsky, 'Your time is up,' and in fact, Jabotinsky's time in the movement was just beginning. His time for public speaking in Basel, however, had come to a close. An associate of Herzl then came over to him and, speaking what Jabotinsky in his memoir called Prussian, said bluntly to him, 'Gehen Sie herunter, sonst werden Sie heruntergeschleppt. Come down or else you will be hauled down.' And Jabotinsky adds, quote, 'I came down without finishing the defense unwanted by the man in whose defense I had taken the floor,' end quote." So Jabotinsky writes, "And then, when the question of the misnamed Uganda plan came up, he, Jabotinsky, suddenly, despite having no real religious affiliation to Judaism or to the land of Israel, stormed out. Why then did he react so strongly? He himself was not sure. Something within him forced him to connect for one moment to the Holy Land. As he writes, quote, 'I realized that my task in that Congress was to keep silent and to observe, and that is what I did. I found a lot of things to observe there. The sixth Congress, the last in Herzl's life, was perhaps the first Congress of adult Zionism. The name of that examination of maturity is known as Uganda. I was one of the minority that voted against Uganda, and together with the rest of the nine Zagers, the no-sayers, walked out of the hall. I wondered myself at the motive hidden deep within my soul that prompted me to vote against, in spite of what I had told my electors," end quote. Jabotinsky further reflected that his own actions were all the more striking, considering his reverence for Herzl. He tells us, quote, "Nobody tried to persuade me to vote as I did. Herzl made a colossal impression on me. This word is no exaggeration, no other description would fit. Colossal. I am not one of those who will easily bow to a personality. In general, I do not remember, out of all the experiences I've had in my life, one man who made any impression on me whatsoever, either before Herzl or after him," end quote. And Jabotinsky adds about Herzl that, quote, "Even today it seems to me that I hear his voice ringing in my ears as he swore to all of us, 'Im eshkachech Yerushalayim.'" And Jabotinsky adds, "I believe his oath, everyone believed, yet still I voted against him, but I do not know why. Just so, that same because that is stronger than a thousand reasons," end quote. This is what Jabotinsky tells us. And what are we to make of this? Here, as with Herzl, we have a man who has not really, up till this point, been fully, for much of his life, affiliated with Jewishness. 4 decades later, in fact, in what would turn out to be one of the last moments of his life, he would be asking someone at that moment to teach him the Kol Nidre, the opening prayer of Yom Kippur. That is how distant he was from much of Jewish tradition. Jabotinsky admits in his recollection that he had no special connection to the land of Israel. He was motivated by what had happened in Kishinev. And yet, when the possibility was put forward of postponing even a little bit the push for the land of Israel, suddenly this culturally assimilated Jew found within him some deep connection to the Holy Land. And that means, if in Basel 1897 was born, as Herzl wrote in his diary, a certainty by Herzl that the Jewish state would come into being, what was born 6 years later in Basel was a discovery made by Jabotinsky about himself. And Jabotinsky further adds that it was at this point that those that had voted on either side in the Congress learned something about themselves. Quote, "Perhaps they learned to have more respect for one another or for the movement than they had before. And it seems to me the movement as a whole also attained greater elevation on that day when the delegates of the people mourned their first political victory. I am sure that Chamberlain, the author of the Uganda proposal, and Balfour and many more statesmen in England and in other countries only on that day realized what Zionism meant, and that the same is true also of many veterans of the movement." End quote. What I think Jabotinsky means is that in that moment, in Basel in 1903, deep down, he discovered the mysterious link between the Holy Land and the Jewish soul. And for that reason among many, it is this moment in Basel that deserves to be remembered. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.